Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome. Wow, I'm off to a running start here. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. We're getting a little bit of a late start today, but we're here and hope that we hear from some of you. 914-338-0164 is the call-in number, and do press 1 if you'd like to speak to us. I don't know what we're talking about, actually, at all.
Well,
we've kind of had a busy morning.
There's always something to talk about. It doesn't matter. We always have topics.
And, yes, so it's spontaneous today.
Yeah. There's always something to discuss in terms of energy and people listening to the show. I'm sure we'll get a call or two. But, you know, I think that when you broaden the topic of where our discussions and we're dealing with the big topic of energy and how that affects one's life and how we direct that energy. It's amazing how much time, how much energy is expended on really frivolous
minutia. Yeah. That's
and obsessive. I mean, think about how your brain operates and where it goes and how you channel it and the things that are basically excessive. It's not needed. I mean, if it's almost like you pull your car into the driveway and you turn it off, and but it never turns off. It just keeps running, and you come out to your car the following morning and there's a half a tank of gas or a quarter of a tank of gas gone, and you go, my God, what? Where did the gas go? Well, the car never turned off. It extends energy. Normally, we as human beings, I mean, it's not going to kill us to be, I mean, maybe there's a stress factor or something, but it's not going to really kill us to be obsessive compulsive or to go on and go over things and over things. It's not going to kill us, but it does waste energy.
Right.
What can you do with that energy otherwise? Think about being in one's life, how much time you spend obsessing over things that really, when you get down to it, it hasn't gone anywhere. You're just wasting
gas. I don't even think that, I mean, obsession may be, you know, more of an extreme state of expending energy in a way that's counterproductive to one's growth. But, I mean, it also is as simple as being distracted by things. Just, you know, putting your attention on things that are not that important. And, I mean, I think everybody is guilty of it at some time or another. I mean, you know, I'm certainly not perfect. What did I say to you before the show started? I said, do you know what I want to do today? I want to sit in my pajamas and look things up on the internet all day long. So it's funny you mentioned that. But I mean, you know, sometimes your mind does need a break. One's mind needs to rest sometimes.
Well,
kind of, maybe that's how I'm feeling. It's raining and so on and so forth. But yeah, I mean, productive, I mean, in terms of productivity or, you know, getting into a higher space, it might not be the best use of my time to sit around, you know, looking up meaningless things, you know, quote-unquote meaningless things online.
Lazy. I don't even know. I mean, if you're looking up things and you're learning something.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. I mean, sometimes we need that time off. However, I think one of the topics of energy, I can't get around it, is discipline. How do we discipline our energy? Think of those people who, they close the door and they study, they work. They don't take phone calls, they don't turn their phone off, they don't accept callers, they're not distracted by, you know, something they hear on the TV. They are disciplined and they go into that mode of thinking. Compare that to the person who, oh boy, I don't want to do this. I don't want to study. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And so they start to do it and they're just waiting for somebody to call to distract them or something happens. And inside, without letting anybody know, they're kind of relieved that they don't have to do the work at hand because now something else has come up and they make a big show of it. Like, oh, I gotta take care of this. I gotta do this. And I don't mean about crying babies or somebody fell in the bathtub or something like that. What I'm talking about are just the casual things that we allow to intrude on the work at hand. Or think about being disciplined and doing the work at hand, and your mind starts to stray and you're thinking about other things. You're not training yourself to be disciplined and focused. And you start thinking about other things. Pretty soon you're reaching for your iPhone and you're checking things out. Or you're making a call to see if anybody called you. I think when we talk about focus and we talk about all the things that we do throughout one's life and all the time wasted, you know, there was an interesting article that smacked you in the face, how much time we waste on freeways, crowded freeways. And you spend, you know, it says like you spend so many years out of your life just sitting on the freeway. Well, okay, you got to get to work. So it's part of the process of getting to work. You can't help the gridlock and you're sitting there on the freeway. Well, I mean, maybe you can't help that because of the demands and requirements. However, what can you do?
Right. Yeah. Maybe learn a foreign language with recordings in the car or listen to lectures or, you know,
you utilize
music appreciation, you know, broadening the mind.
That's right.
Can be done in a car. But a lot of people will, I mean, focus on the frustration of being on the road and get very angry and, you know.
And a lot of people, you know, a lot of people reach for their iPhones and, you know, text or, I mean, it's still
which you shouldn't be doing in the car.
You shouldn't be doing. And it's nonsense anyways. Oh, what are you doing? Here I am stuck. I'll take a picture of myself and show myself stuck on the freeway and put it out. That would be constructive. You know, who cares? I think when one gets towards the end of one's life, one of the questions to be asked is, what did I do with my time? How much idle time did I do? And I don't mean to say that we're not all inclined to sit in our pajamas and look at the internet for, you know, an hour or two or something, or watch a movie or just doze or take a walk. I mean, these are parts of human existence. These are healthy things in so many words. But when we spend so much energy avoiding the crucial things that we must be doing, how about people who are creative? Oh, I'm going to write that script. Uh-oh. I got to clean the house. Oh, it's too much clutter. I can't do it until I get rid of the clutter. Oh, somebody just called. I can't get to the clutter today. Oh, you know, and it just goes on and on and on. And at the end of one's life, they say, oh, I should have done this. I should have done that. I should have done this. You know, there's a movie, Schindler's List. And I don't know how accurate this one scene is, but Schindler at the end of the movie says he's helping all the Jews and everything. And at the end, he says, I could have done more. I could have done more. I could have done more. It's a line that they put in the movie. I don't know how accurate it was. And you think to yourself, at least I thought when I was watching the movie, you could have done more. What you did was fantastic. But there's always the thought that when you are disciplined and you reach a conclusion that you are out to fulfill a task, the answer is, yeah, you could have done more. There's always more you could have done.
But I think just it's important to say that focusing one's energy in the right path. path rather than just focusing one's energy on specific goals or achievement. You know, we've been talking about achieving self-mastery, and then, you know, the process of achievement or being a high achiever comes into play. And, you know, what does that mean, being a high achiever? I mean, is that accomplishing linear goals, or is it really getting into a path of being in the energy flow of the universe and doing the highest, reaching your highest potential in terms of spirituality? We just watched a movie, which is not, I mean, it's not like a Schindler's List movie, Molly's Game.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, the movie's okay, and I don't want to ruin it for anybody who hasn't watched it and plans to watch it. But the interesting thing about this woman is she comes from a very high achieving family, very high achieving. She's a brother who is a cardiothoracic surgeon, was a genius, you know, exhibiting these prodigious talents at a very young age. Her other brother was, I believe, like a Olympic champion skiing, and then he was drafted in the NFL. She herself was a fairly high achiever as well as a skier, but injured herself. But anyway, but she moves to LA and gets into, through being an assistant, overseeing poker games, being a hostess at poker games, develops this multi-million dollar business, essentially hosting poker games and so on and so forth. So, and then there's a big fall for her. So with that, I mean, you know, she was extremely focused at building her network, but also at the same time was diverting from the values she was raised, you know, with, you know, helping others, being of service. She really started to mute that part of her life and, you know, was, you know, directing her energy into achievement for self, earning massive amounts of money and, you know, superficial. So she was very focused. So you can be very focused, my point is, and have your focus totally in the wrong place. So being focused is great, but channeling it properly is, I think, really important.
Oh, I think so. I mean, what, the most recent example, not that this is impartial to what I think of the person, but I was hearing, you know, William Barr, who's being, who's the nominee for the Attorney General. They briefly went over in the hearings everything he's done throughout his life. I mean, this has nothing to do with support or not support, but I was impressed with all of his
accomplishments.
And right. I thought, my God, there's a full life of someone who's done so much and had so many different roles, raised a family. I think he has three daughters. And they all seem to be pretty well. They're intelligent people. They're successful. So he handled that firmly. And at the same time, he's done so much. I think what you got to do, people, is you got to look back at your life and say, what are my accomplishments? What have I done? I'm going to write out all the things that I'm proud of that I've done. And maybe you can draw a line on that same piece of paper, and on the other side of the column, talk about time you wasted. How much time did you waste? What did you do that you're not proud of? What did you do that will you procrastinate? But don't despair, because always compare it to your accomplishments, and don't minimize your one's accomplishments, but make sure that column far outweighs the other side of the column where you have really nothing but a lot of wasted time and effort to do really nothing.
Well, we lost our caller. Well, I love the level of patience.
Another accomplishment is attention span.
God.
I mean, attention span.
That 45-second wait that they had was just too much.
Well.
Yeah, but I mean, on the same token, I mean, accomplishing. If you're just accomplishing on a physical level, then you fall short of what you're
what
really
you
supposed to
level?
Well, I mean, on a linear level, you know, getting a home, even with this woman that the movie was about, I think in her life now she's saying, well, you know, I really found that I was an entrepreneur, and I grew up in my family feeling like I was never meeting my brother set a bar that I could not reach, and I always compared myself to them. So it was really important for me to go out in the world and prove myself to my parents, and, you know, this approval from the world was very important to me. And so after all these things happened to her, she reevaluated and realized how she could be a better person in the world and not so much about herself. So I think when we're self-involved, I mean, obviously we have to accomplish things on an ego level as we're moving through our journeys on the planet. But I think that they have to be balanced.
Oh yeah, they need to be balanced. And you know, I mean,
so I don't know what this
even when you talk
William
like,
Barr.
Well,
mean, I don't
when
know.
When you talk about, you know, it's very linear.
Are, but
he's
exactly
an
physical. That's what I meant.
Well,
linear physical.
Well, he's an attorney, and he's been of service to the country and service to others. He's basically all of his accomplishments are on a linear line, and they're major and impressive, but they all formulate under a constant theme.
Right.
Somebody like Molly, who was the skier, and then she morphs into this sort of gambling manipulator and
well, she didn't gamble. She didn't gamble, but she was like basically a networker,
yeah.
A networker, a hostess. I mean, someone who really got into the psychology of the players and learned what they liked, learned how to insert herself into this group of people that differed. I mean, celebrities, politicians, these were all the, you know.
Right. Well, she's a strategist because
exactly.
as I recall in the movie, I was half paying attention to it, but there were scenes where she would get on the ski at the ski entrance there, and she would anticipate the move she was going. She already mapped out in her mind the angle at which she was going to maneuver this course.
Well, according to how the movie, yes,
the movie.
That was the movie.
But
I don't know.
Skiers,
yeah, they have to.
They have to strategize
and create a path,
and they work quickly.
Right.
And if there's things that come up unexpectedly, they have to know how to manipulate and move their body around. So if we look at it, if she's in whatever, she has an accident, she doesn't go back to skiing anymore. You get older. And she uses that same mindset
applying to her
same challenging in a different kind of challenging energy. Maybe circumstances brought her into the gambling world, and she became impressed with how much money was being spent, and she started to a little bit manipulate her boss and figure out how to extract herself from there and create her own empire. I mean, that's a strategist, and strategy, I think, is crucial to success.
Well, yeah, and I think the kids, I think they grew up playing chess, which is obviously a game of strategy. And that was, I mean, that was something they skied, obviously,
yeah.
Strategical. So they were, that was a part of their upbringing from a young age.
Right. What,
and they were,
I mean,
really pushed by the father, apparently, academically and physically.
I think when we get into the spiritual / ethical moral structure of strategy, we have those people who are greatly successful but have used strategy in a way that is the antithesis of being humane, of being ethical. They have accomplished what they've accomplished, and they've done so by manipulating people, stepping on people, double crossing, and they get to where they are, as opposed to the more, I guess we could say, the more honorable route of using strategy to gain one's highest position, and you have few casualties. I mean, except in the theory of war, you win people and you beat people out, but you don't use means, you know, you don't assassinate, you don't throw acid on their face, talking about skiing, skating too. You don't do things that are going to undermine somebody so that you
can get
said,
ahead. Right.
I got where I got. A lot of political leaders, you know, they kill and they do this. We were watching the movie The Death of Stalin, and God knows what went on there. I mean, it all is, can success, can high achievement, can the epitome of one's position in life be accomplished without being unethical, unmoral, by keeping those spiritual boundaries intact and by leading a life that is purely disciplined and yet so fulfilling and rounded out that you don't leave casualties behind. I mean, I think it's a very difficult course, talking about skiing, I think it's a very difficult course to come to the end result of one's life and say, I got here without too many blemishes, without too many accidents, without too many altercations, without too many acts against my fellow human beings that I'm not particularly proud of. I think that's a difficult process. But then you have to eventually say, okay, so if I don't look at others and what I might have done to them, what about myself? How did I get here? You know, talk about the boxers and the stuff that take the steroids and,
weightlifters.
Weightlifters.
More than boxers, I think. I mean, maybe boxers take steroids.
Well,
probably
strict,
they do.
There's strict regulations.
But weightlifters.
But people who achieve. But
athletes, I mean, there's a lot of Olympic athletes that have been caught, you know, with drugs in their system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Runners even, you know.
Yeah. Entertainers. I mean, people who are manic and crazy, but a lot of that is induced by the effects of drugs and things like that. That's another reason to come to some form of conclusion as the authenticity of one's journey through life. Did you do it organically, or did you do it through some aid or some vice that was not really part of the journey in terms of the fulfillment of pure accomplishment? I know there are crude adjectives here, but we're trying the best we can to establish the idea that what one does with one's energy, I mean, even if it's a physicality, it's ultimately attached to spirituality. I mean, think of these priests, not to go against any religion, but think of the priests who have worked hard to be bishops and cardinals and just downright priests.
priests.
Well, you know, they lead their church. And not a bishop or a
priest,
just a priest.
A priest.
That they've accomplished, they've done great. And then, wow, you go through a door and there's all this darkness and sexual abuse. And
right, and it happens, I mean, not only in the Catholic religion, but it happens. Even if we're in, you know, say that the rate of sexual abuse is higher in police officers than in the Catholic Church.
Of course.
I mean,
I'm just.
But no, I know you're using an example, rabbis or whatever.
Rabbi,
so,
doesn't matter.
But I know right now it's a big thing happening in California. They're releasing a lot of names of priests and the diocese up north, and then Chicago is going through a lot of turmoil with their priests.
There are Catholic priests that are disgusted by this. They're appalled. So it has nothing. I was just reading about one that's totally appalled by what's going on, and it is embarrassing. It is humiliating for their title, but again, people of high position. Look at that Weinstein. Now his lawyer's leaving him. Who God knows why.
Well, and I mean, I'm sure there's so much more that is, I mean, he's being used as an example, I think. I mean, he's a creep, but I'm certain that there is much more. There are many more people in the Hollywood world that have committed terrible crimes, and they're being protected still. So, you know, people get scapegoated
it's all degrees of this, you know, how you achieve a certain sense of power, and then the fall from grace that is committed through your own personal acts that you can't, even Clinton and what happened there in the White House. I mean, Nixon, you've got to at some point be accountable for your actions. And we're all guilty. We all have our darkness. We all have our sins that we've committed, things we're not proud of. Very few of us are unblemished. So, but I think the thing is, ultimately, what can you do to make amends, to repair, to go forward and change your life in such a way that you don't continue this? Or do you actually go to the bitter end and end up, you know, with tremendous amounts of guilt, or you're just apathetic, or you put a bullet in your head because you can't take it anymore? We just dealt with a client who has a friend whose husband committed suicide through alcoholism, and we're dealing with that. I mean, and they have children, and their way out, their redemption is that they had a life, perhaps a life insurance policy that they give to their family now. So
if they qualify even with the suicide for life insurance?
Apparently. I don't know. Apparently, I think sometimes
there's clauses. It depends on the life insurance policy, but this
but
probably
this
is going to be okay.
This was okay. So, but is that the grace? Well, he was a horrible person, alcoholic, in the bars throughout his life. Oh, you know, he had a rough child, this, that, and the other. But boy, what a saint. He shot himself in the head, and he left a life insurance policy for his family. I don't know. I don't know. Because you can extract that and say, okay, he did that. But still, what do you do with the content of one's life? What you do with your life?
Well,
not just your last act.
Right. Exactly. And on the last show, we had a caller who was asking questions, which it was nice. It was real, actually very nice to hear a caller saying, and this is someone we've dealt with for many years, but asking a question about what do I need to do to reduce my karma? I don't want to do the planet again. And I want to learn more about how to move forward so I can, you know, I don't want to say actually transcend, because it's like a contradiction, but transcend ultimately and not come back. So, what is enough? I mean, how do we measure that at the end of one's life? What is enough that one has completed everything that needs to be completed and can ultimately leave? How is that measured? I mean, we certainly can't judge that ourselves.
It's a big playground. I mean, we think we have an array of choices we can make, whether one devotes themselves to starving children or to animals or to political issues, human rights,
healthcare. I mean,
yeah, you have a playground. You can't, I mean, as a human being, you can try to do it all, and that's impressive. Or you specify what you want to do and you devote your entire breath to it.
Well, and then, you know, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, you're going to say something?
No, I don't. I mean, I can go on, but go ahead.
The only thing that I was going to say is that, you know, oftentimes there'll be a news story that we'll see and, you know, someone has sacrificed his or her life for, you know, a child, for instance, pushed the child out of the way of a speeding train or a car or, you know, save someone from drowning. And I'll say to you, Neil, what do you think happened? Well, that person transcended. Sometimes is your answer. That person transcended. Sometimes, though, same situation or similar situation, you say, I don't know. I mean, obviously, you've got there's a gift in your analysis that can determine, energetically speaking, whether maybe any given person and an individual might transcend at that point, but it's not always the same answer. So even when you're sacrificing your life, you have to weigh everything that's happened in all of the lives and all the journeys on the astral plane. So it's not always, well, you know, you save somebody's life, you're done.
It's simplistic. Like
so,
that. Yeah. I mean, well,
there are many variables is my point.
Sometimes we get into this convoluted, but still intricately interesting attitude that you can transcend a lifetime, but not all lifetimes. So what you've done is you've eliminated the energy of one lifetime.
One lifetime.
But you still have other lifetimes.
Times
to
resolve. So you can transcend one lifetime and you've resolved that karma, but you're still dealing with karma from other lifetimes, and you move up on the scale of master number or karmic number, for instance.
Let's say, well, a crude example. So you're in school and you're having trouble in math and you do everything to pass math and the teacher says, okay, you've done beautiful, get an A in math. You don't have to face this math again, but your social studies and your English, oh boy, you got to come back for that. You suffered there. Now, if we use that crude metaphor, we can say that you can pass
a class, right?
Class.
Grade. You could be moved from fourth grade to fifth grade, even though you didn't do well in English and, you know, did well in math.
Or you have those grades that overall go through the average, but the A, outstanding A in mathematics, it stays intact. But it gets swept up into now the average of all the other grades. So the acceleration and the accomplishment you achieve in one lifetime does get factored into the overall average of what the soul is going through. But also, I think that I'm in no position, of course, to judge somebody's soul, where
right.
it's going. So I don't want to have that misconstruction there. But there's a thing, you know, when a person has everything to live for and they're really happy and they're really content and they're safe, and in that moment they see that they might have to risk their life for somebody, and it's none of their business, they don't know the person, but they can calculate, oh boy, if I attempt to save this person's life, I'm going to go, I'm dead. People who are drowning, people who are running into the street. When that person sacrifices their life for somebody else, there apparently seems to be, at least in some sacred texts, biblical texts, whatnot, that there's nothing, no greater gift than that you lay your life down for your brother, including soldiers. I mean, yes. When you make a sacrifice, and that's what a sacrifice is. A sacrifice is not that you have nothing to live for and you had 10 minutes to live, so you save somebody. A sacrifice is giving up so much that means dear to you, but you make a sacrifice to give your life for a certain situation or a certain cause, especially if it involves a living form, a living thing. People who run to the burning house to save their cat and they're burned to death. You know, all of these are acts that, and in fact, there are cats that do it.
Well, animals,
and get their
right.
kittens and their paws are
or
scored.
Animals that save their owners, even. So, I mean,
absolutely.
But I mean, we're not talking, when we deal with animals, we're not talking about animals on a soul level. Animals don't have souls. I know a lot of people say animals have souls. They have souls. They're so loving. Of course they have souls. No, they don't. They have spirits. So they don't go through the judgment that a human soul goes through. They don't accumulate karma and have to, you know, reincarnate and come back. I mean, maybe pets do sometimes return, but in terms of a soul judgment, that doesn't, you know, your cat doesn't
yeah.
go up there and get judged.
Well, and, you know,
death.
Talking about
that
souls and spirits, animals have emotions, and those emotions are attached to things that mean something to them. And their DNA is such that they'll devote their lives, they'll sacrifice their lives for their masters, to protect their masters. And so there's a certain... I think there's a certain gene in nature that somehow we all have as living forms, some, to various degrees, of course, sometimes we're devoid of it, that is about the sacrifice that we give to others and the care we give to others. It even comes in the smallest camera angles of opening up a door for somebody who's crippled. I mean, you know, we're not just robots. There's something in the human form that has to do with caring for others.
Well, social awareness, being considerate of your fellow human, or, you know, animal.
You know, take the Titanic, saying the guy that runs over the men and children and jumps in the lifeboat, as opposed to the person who's making sure everybody gets on the lifeboat while they're consumed by the wreckage in the water and they drown. I mean, you have an array of different attitudes and personalities, even in a catastrophe like that, in metaphor like that. People who rushed into the 9/11, the firemen that rushed in, maybe some of them knew they were going to die. Firemen who sacrifice. These people of service that are geared, maybe they love the job, maybe it's exciting to them, but they know that they are on an element of risk and they're willing to give their life in the line of duty.
Right, but back to the original point, which is, you know, even in giving one's life, it is not necessarily guaranteed. And again, it's not our place to judge or our, I mean, we're not judging, but in terms of the information that we know that you've taught me, etc., you don't always transcend if you even sacrifice your life. So there's so many things. I mean, it's just, and then on a lesser level, it's just not about being a good person and opening up the door for somebody that gets you off the planet. There's so much to accomplish and, it, you know, so much focus one needs to put into that in order to move through all of their necessary energies. I don't know. They haven't raised their hand. So we need people to raise their hand, but finish what you're going to say because no one's raised his or her hand yet.
If you want a reading, raise your hand.
Okay, but
I mean,
say what
I think it's, I think at least me, myself, when I wake up in the morning, my mind is set. What am I going to do today? How much can I accomplish? And how much can I help? I mean, that's not to blow my own bugle, but it's an attitude of thinking, you know, what can you offer? And it doesn't mean to say, oh boy, because I think that way and I act that way, I'm going to transcend. I don't know. You know, I think that matter comes in the after. That's
right.
Gonna be
that's
a different
not a
judgment.
Right.
But as long as you're doing everything you can do to make your life valuable on the planet, and you consider the body, the mind, the soul, the spirit.
Body, mind, soul, and spirit. So you have to consider all those things. I mean, back to the Molly's game. I quickly read her book because, I mean, the story is really interesting and the book's not that great. But, I mean, it's an interesting story. And I watched a couple of interviews and she herself is saying, listen, now I have a purpose. She's very involved in 12-step because I think she got into drugs during this whole journey in her poker world. And so she entered 12 step and in her 12 step program, she learned that, you know, being of service to others and getting outside her own ego was really important. And so on that level, obviously, you know, getting outside oneself, but then is she really a spiritual human being? I would say probably not a deeply spiritual person, but she's on a social humanitarian level, starting to do what is necessary for her soul to move forward. Maybe not ultimately in a spiritual way, but
there is no bottom to spirit. There is no bottom to the soul, really. We're constantly transcending to the next stage and doing everything we can, and not stopping and saying we've done enough. There's always the question, could we have done more? Because in asking that question, even though we have been a noble servant and we have served the world well and we have done our job, does that mean that it's over? It's never over. The soul goes on, spirit goes on. So the idea that you always can do more has a promising aspect that there's a continuation. So you don't, really, when you think about it, when you come to the end of your life and you say it's a closed book, I've done everything, there's something kind of amiss about that, because that's to almost conclude that, okay, it's over. But if you look at the idea that the soul is going to be leaving the body, the spirit is going to be leaving the body, it's not over at all.
Right. It's there's always a continuum.
So the question at the end of life is, oh my God, I'm going to the next transition to do more, to accomplish more, not just sit on a rocking chair and, you know, sit in the clouds and look at the sky. There's always something more to do, and that continuation, I think, is vital.
Okay, let us bring on, I believe, 201 wants to speak with us. Hi, do you want to talk to us?
Hi, Kristen. Hi, Neil. This is Jackie.
Hi.
I got on the show late, but the last couple of comments was resonating with me very strongly. Because I know what I have to do is on a deeper level. I just still have to be cautious because helping someone who obviously is a snake is very risky.
What do you mean?
I'm in a situation where same people who hurt me they expect me to help them.
Well, I mean, setting boundaries and knowing your limits with certain people is healthy. So, you know, a person is not necessarily obligated to help those that have hurt them and you know, been evil to them. I mean, sometimes the healthiest thing is detaching from those people. So, I mean, can you give us a little bit more on what exactly is going on? I mean, this is regarding your family, I think, in the house, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so just give us a little bit more information on how they want you to help and what, you know, what you're considering doing.
Well, right now, my brother actually wants, he has no place to stay. And it's getting cold. And he comes by and he squats outside. He stays in the car.
Oh, boy.
And I'm heating the house. Utilities are on in the house. And the human side of me don't feel good that he's around.
And is he squatting in front of the house that is
He's sitting in the car. He comes in the car when I'm not there. He parks in the driveway.
It's the house that you're buying or whatever, right? It's not your house,
yes.
But it's the house of your mom or whatever.
Right.
Okay.
And I know he's doing it because he knows that the property is there. And I know that he's facing his hard time now because he made terrible choices. And his terrible choices affected me financially, emotionally, all them years.
Yeah.
Now, ordinarily, if it was someone else, I would say, okay, you could stay here temporarily until you get back on your feet. But I also know this is that snake that if I pick him up, he'll turn around and bite
me. Yeah.
You get it?
Well, yeah.
So
I mean,
I don't know in my chart, what do you see? Because, I mean, after the ink is dried and everything is different, then I can help him out. But right now, I would be taking a major risk with him.
I mean, I personally don't feel great about it, but maybe Neil has a different opinion. What's your brother's birthday?
August.
You know what?
August 19th, 1967. I don't know his time of birth.
That we don't work with time, really. I mean, that's, you know, not really that important. 18, 28. 13. It's a 41.5.
No, when you go through life, Jackie, and you think, okay, so one text says turn the other cheek, no matter how many times your brother or sister hurts you, just keep turning the other cheek, and then you look at that great novel, Les Misérables, where the convict just overwhelmingly through love and changes this policeman's life around, but the policeman ends up committing suicide after he's so ruthlessly pursued this man. You know, there's always acts of kindness that are outstanding, and that's great. That's part of the condition too, but also, is it fair to say that we're going to be reprimanded because we have to make hard choices? And those sometimes hard choices means we can't be codependent. We can't allow our lives to be
disrupted.
I mean, are you supposed to now let heroin addicts come into your home? Anyone who comes in for the street because you just have a loving attitude?
Well, because she's feeling, I mean, obviously because they're related and they're family and the, you know, that bond is probably making you feel like you're responsible.
It gets messy. I mean, when we get into the elements of alcoholism in family or narcotics, drugs, convicts, there is a sense of duty to family, but there's also a line that I think can be drawn where you have your own standards. And it doesn't mean that you're putting a knife in your sibling's back or anything, but it means that you have standards and you have to live by those standards. Now, the justification may be that it isn't safe for me to allow this person in. It just isn't safe, and this person has to grow up and make options. I can't open up the door to this person because it's going to hurt me, and it's ultimately not going to help them. And so you sometimes choices that we make doesn't mean that we're not being spiritual or giving or loving. But the choice that you make, yes, it can be examined and scrutinized and your motives and everything. But I don't think, Jackie, that necessarily you have to be compelled just because it's a family member that you're going to do anything and everything. I mean, you have to be tough.
I'm not going to do anything and everything. I just have to be able to deal with the feeling that I get, because at the end of the day, this is the person that caused all of the problems. One of two people that masterminded and caused all of the problems. Everything that's going on was a result of his decision making, his actions, and also everything that I've had to pay for in the last 8 years. I really don't owe him anything.
Well, I mean, and bringing him into the home is going to probably present problems for you. I mean, whether you're going to completely detach from him and make a clean break, or whether there's going to be still a relationship. I mean, is that what is your thought about, huh?
Well, what she does with her feelings. What does she do with her feelings after she's made a decision? What does she do with those feelings? I don't, you know, Jackie, sometimes you just have to have tough love on yourself.
But I mean, are you considering a clean break versus some ties to your brother?
No, a clean break.
A clean break.
A clean break.
So what feeling are you struggling with? Maybe we're getting lost there.
I just wish that he would just find his way and go on about his business and not get in my way. Because there's a part of me that realized that the only reason why he's come back is because he realized that I'm doing what he should have done and he didn't do it. And I know that he's also the type of person, he's very envious. And his the level of his maliciousness was what I learned. That was the lesson that I learned. And patience. And, you know, I don't know, maybe... I don't know what the question really was.
How did you get out of that cycle? Did you decide to help yourself and make hard choices?
Yes, I had no other choice. And the hard choices that I make, I'm dealing with it day by day. Matter of fact, everything that I'm going through is a result of his action. And at the end, he knows that. He don't want to admit it. He's trying to find a million and one excuses. I limit the conversations I have with him because I know that he's very calculating and he doesn't want to take responsibility, but at the end of the day, I am, and I have. So, you know, I just wasn't sure how to internalize the whole idea that, okay, now I'm seeing you suffer. And well, I mean, I understand the story of turning the other cheek and forgiveness, because I've been told multiple times that I have to forgive, whether it was forgive others or even forgiving myself, to allow myself to be in the predicament in the first place.
But you don't need to, I mean, you don't have to, forgiving doesn't mean you, that then thereby
forget.
You have to enable the person. Also,
right.
I would say, you know, if he's in the driveway of the home, and I mean, that's not, he's trespassing. I mean, he can't just.
Right, exactly. And he knows that. Well, he says that he's going to be leaving in about a week or so. Let's just see that.
Well,
hopefully
maybe
I can get everything done and move forward.
Where is he going in a week?
I don't know, and I really don't care because he's a grown man.
Well, but I mean, there's the problem of there's the issue of him, you know, saying he's leaving, but he could come back and sit in the driveway. So I mean,
no. By the time everything is done and after I submit all my paperwork and everything, once the ink is dried and that's it. He's made his choices.
His
choices cost me a lot.
You you've lived your life, Jackie, mm-hmm. and you've made your decisions, and they're difficult. And what you're doing with him is you're compelling him to follow the path you chose. So you're mm-hmm. doing what is right. You're doing for him what you did for yourself. And don't hold these feelings of whatever you're working out in your mind that might seem like you're not being nice or whatever your inner feelings are. You're teaching him the path that he needs to go on. You're showing him where he needs to go. And let go.
And we talked about, like, her involvement with her family and how it's
yeah,
coming up from past life. And there was a difference when there was a different arrangement of power, and she was an offender in the past life. So right now, to get out of that situation where you're embedded in those karmas, I mean, it sounds like letting go, cutting ties is the best thing. Is he like employed? Is he a drinker?
No, he works for himself, but he has a problem with women and gambling. He likes to flash money. He spends money. Yes, his addiction is to women. His addiction is to gambling and flashing. You know, like when he has money, like he actually took all the money that he was responsible for when he was controlling this state, and he made bad investments. He went and married some woman overseas. He lived off of the estate.
And he's employed, but does he have a house?
He works for himself. Well, I don't know, because at one point I heard he even purchased land, whether he kept it. Like, he's the person who will buy stuff and then lose it. Like, risky.
Well,
I don't live that way.
Well,
you're letting go, making a decision and feeling good about it and letting go, Jackie, is going to be effort on your part. But to make a decision and then to linger with the guilt is not healthy.
And
you've got to consider that.
And if he's going to continue to trespass and you're letting go and cutting ties, you have to deal with that on a legal level. I mean, you can't let him do that. He has to suffer consequences. Only
let
him park the driveway.
You want to know the truth? The only reason why I don't have a problem with him sitting here right now, he doesn't realize that he's asking security. Because the house is vacant. All right?
No.
I mean, he got in one night, but we end up having to close the windows. He don't know that I know that he got in.
Well, you know, there's a difference. You're not hiring to do it, and you can't rationalize. You've got to make your firm decision
right.
to go on with life.
Right.
And that rationalization may not be healthy.
Well, I'm going to be healthy for who? Him or myself?
Yourself. I mean, you can't,
well,
you know, say
the unhealthy part of it was that I was feeling bad because I know that, you know, he's out there.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, if you're cutting yourself, if you're making a clean break, then you can't go back to, you know, worrying. I mean, it's natural to worry.
Don't worry
about
it. You've
got to separate yourself from your emotions and say, this is like tough love. And if he's trespassing on the property, then you call the police.
That's like saying, you know, I got this house I own. I don't live there, but a lot of gang members hang out there, but they keep away the coyotes so they don't eat my pets. I mean, your thinking is all jumbled. You make your decision. Don't rationalize and make excuses because that might be your inclination, because there's this internal problem.
You're still attached, unfortunately, to the situation if you're allowing or saying, well, you know, he is guarding the property. I mean, you're not making a clean break. That's not a clean break. And so you're going to still, I mean, that's not a good way to heal your emotions.
Okay. Okay, so in terms of my own chart, I don't want to take too much time. First of all, if I'm at work.
We're actually out of time, but what's the question? What's the question?
I do have some paperwork that I have to submit to my attorneys so that I can actually get a date. I'm just trying to get all line everything up now. Within my chart, when is a good time to submit it?
Well, I mean, you're going through a change. I mean, you just had a birthday. I would say submit it as soon as possible. Neil, quick.
I would agree.
Yeah. Because,
okay.
Isn't it 54? Yeah.
She
54. So now, do it as soon as possible.
Okay.
I wouldn't wait.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, Jackie. Good luck.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Okay, we're out of time. So a full hour, lots of chatting, but we are back on the air Friday. Hopefully we'll hear from more of you then. Bye-bye.